Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 333rd episode of Constructive Criticism. For real this time. Not messing up the numbers. I'm your host, Mason. I'm joined by my co-host, Allie. Allie, how's your Monday going?
I was productive.
Nice. You get a lot done. It's funny, we're going to be talking about the BNR today, but I watched a 5-minute video with your thoughts. So going into this, I have all the cards. I know all the information. I've get probed you.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I'm excited to talk about the BNR today. I know, I think that sets up really well of, like, we talked about last week our thoughts, and now we actually get something to compare that to and see if we were right.
Yeah, I think we missed pretty hard on most of them, right? I guess we didn't know Popper, so just by default, we didn't miss that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Well, that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to spend most of the show talking about that. But before that, we're going to do hashtag always improving. It's the point of the show. Not getting better, you're getting worse. And my hashtag always improving moment from this last week was I liked playing mono green leading up to this past week. And I was enjoying playing it. And a friend messaged me and they're like, hey, do you want to help me test this SG thing this weekend? Like, I'm playing in it, and I didn't really want to actually play, but I wanted to, like, think about it some, and I was just thinking about monogreen, and I was like, why are we not playing Shifting Ceratops in our monogreen decks? Like, we're playing these pump spells. I don't really like them. They're only good against the other creature decks. We have the Great Henge for that. So what if we just, like, took those out, put Ceratopses in, and then we just have, like, you know, our sideboard card main deck. Everyone else is playing their hate cards main deck. We can do it too, you know, and it's still like kind of a reasonable body in the later game and certain matchups. And so I just like thought about it, went home, made those swaps, and just like won 9 in a row to go from like diamond 3 to mythic, and was just like, oh great. And then I climbed up to like 100 mythic, whatever, playing it. And it was fun. It was cool to like just think about that sort of thing and like think about the process, you know, and like talking about the past, the whole process of working on like, can we do something? Can we attack it? Is what we're doing making sense? And then, you know, implementing that. So thick mono green. That's what I'm about.
I played a little bit of mono green in historic today. It's very different than anything I ever do.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I mean, like, I do like creature decks, but I don't like, all creature decks, if that makes sense. I just like, I want to draw cards and do things, and a lot of the like mono green was kind of just like turn creatures sideways without even like the like complexity of something like burn, where you have to direct your lightning strike somewhere or something.
I feel you. Okay. Yeah, Vivian's your card when it comes to that in the standard. I don't know about mono green and historic, but Vivian's your split pump spell slash kill spell. And so that's a lot of that comes down. Besides obviously attacking and blocking, but then the other skill that I think you're underrating is drawing Pelt Collector or Llanowar Elves on one. That's the other part of the game that's smart. Very exciting. Yeah, the sweat's not as good on Arena because you just like click Mulligan, but in real life you gotta get that shuffle. You know, it's like, ooh, will I, won't I? So. It's been pretty great. That's me. Allie, what about you?
I think this is something that I've kind of been just, like, developing for a long time, but I think it really comes together with this BNR announcement, and we can talk about, like, Pioneer later on in the show. But just kind of having an opinion and, like, disliking something doesn't, like, always correlate to a format health or what a format should look like. And I know we've like brought up topics like this before, but I think it really hit me of just like, I can think Pioneer is super boring, but I can also think it's very healthy at the same time. And I think being kind of objective like that in general will eventually just make me a better Magic player. So I'm not like making excuses of like, oh, this format sucks because it's unhealthy or whatever. And then I just like, I don't know, like write off different decks or strategies or brewing or like a million different things that you can think of because you just like think the format's unhealthy. And I don't know, maybe it's not, maybe it's just boring.
Yeah, or maybe it's just not the person's cup of tea, right? Like, yeah, that's a huge thing. And I think that's, you know, there's been a lot of talk recently on social media about how, like, COVID amplifies things. And, like, you know, we're stuck at home and things we're doing more of them, right? And I think it kind of does this for Magic, too, where it's, like, if you maybe before went to your LGS to play Magic and then you played, like, you know, the one SCG in, like, you know, your state every couple months or whatever, your interaction with Magic was predominantly online, but you still had other people you were talking to, right? So it's like, oh, I really love Modern. You know, you go to Modern FNM, you got like 50 people there, they're your friends, and they're like, yeah, this deck's kind of lame, but, you know, Modern's fun. You're like, yeah, Modern is fun. I do enjoy this. And then what happens online is that, you know, normally things that are negative, kind of like the crab mentality, right? Like people like to take other people down, take things down they don't like, and, you know, they try to drag it down with them. And it's like, if you like Modern, you can't because I don't, you know, and they try to like wriggle it down there. And so you get kind of stuck in a vortex, you know? And so I think that like sometimes things aren't even that way. They just get amplified by it, you know, and it's miserable for like no reason.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I also like that what you said too there for a less bigger picture philosophical thing or whatever of just like it's kind of getting rid of an excuse when it comes time to like practice or do something, right? It's like super easy when you're playing the third, you know, SCG or GP in a row that's Modern. You're like, God, I hate Modern, you know? And now you're just kind of like, yeah, it's not my cup of tea, but I'm choosing to participate in these things and so I should put some time into it, you know? I kind of like that, so I think that's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg. And you can ask a Patreon question just like this one right here from Daniel. Daniel says, when evaluating games, assuming you have an understanding of what matters in the matchup, how do you correct yourself from steering the ship for too long and allowing the board state to become completely insurmountable? And so that's the question. And then I kind of asked Daniel to explain a little more, and he gave the example of, let's say your opponent has a Raging Ravine in play and they have like a Liliana in hand, and you need to balance like answering the Raging Ravine but also being able to counter the Liliana because the Liliana is going to be devastating in the example. And so just kind of, you know, having to toe that line. And Allie, do you have any thoughts on this?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the original question? I have the example in mind now.
Okay, sure. So just to clarify to those at home, basically, how do you correct yourself from steering the ship for too long and allowing the board state to become insurmountable? So how long do you toe the line, kind of? So I think what the person is trying to ask, you know how there are some board states where you're not doing something because you're respecting the thing they could be doing, but they have something clocking you while that's happening? That thing that's in your hand, you're basically, you could answer, you know, the random creature on the board, the Gruul Spellbreaker, but you need to hold the answer for the Questing Beast. And if they hit the Questing Beast on the table, you're kind of out of it. And how do you kind of toe that line and then not let it take over the game, because that can become very stressful for a lot of players, you know? You're like, do I not? Da, 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 da. And so I think that's kind of the meat and potatoes of the question.
Okay. I can conceptualize that.
Yeah.
I think it obviously depends on matchups, what deck you're playing, etc., etc. I am not unfamiliar with playing interactive decks, and I don't really know when I like pick this up or just kind of like learn this maybe just through playing so much, but I typically tend to just kind of like let that pressure happen for a while, whether that be like on my life total. If it's not very significant to the game, like I'm a big fan of like winning the game at one life, honestly. But it, I mean, like if specifically we're looking at like, oh, we want to hold up a counter spell, but also like remove the thing that's taking pressure off, I typically like to operate on like my opponent's end step or after combat. Like I'm generally super cool taking 4 or something to see what they play post combat, and if they don't, then I'll be like, all right, well, I took 4, but I still have my counter spell for what matters, like next turn.
Yeah, so you're, and it's funny because I think you kind of hit what I actually messaged them in DM the nail on the head with, is that I think the way that you kind of get good at this, and it's not super helpful because it's kind of hard to, you know, take action for the listeners, is you kind of get to a situation where you start to feel those things out and you get the experience, you know? And we talked about this in the past once, but like people say they're dumb when this thing that they're not used to having happens to them, like, oh, I should have seen this. And they call themselves dumb and stupid or whatever. And the reality is that they're most likely inexperienced. They're not actually dumb or stupid. They are capable of learning this. They just hadn't experienced it before. And I think you just have to kind of be in those situations a lot. And then you start to get a feel for it. And I think the other thing that you kind of mentioned there as well is kind of get some confidence towards it too, where you're like, I know that I can navigate through this situation. I know I can handle this sort of thing. And I know this sort of thing's going to work out. So I think that's kind of the two pieces to it from there. It's definitely I think it's super important. And I do think it's a thing that I think it's like, not like a hard stop, but it's kind of like a speed bump and like leveling up from, you know, the being like a tier of player to the next tier of player, where like, I think a lot of players, if something is killing them, they're like, I must kill the thing that's killing me. And so they do. And then there's like the next level where they're like kind of doing what you're saying, but they never think about deeper, where they're like, I can let that thing hit me for 6 turns and I'll be at 1 and I'll stabilize. And they don't think about like, this is an aggressive deck. It plays a lot of haste creatures. Maybe you should only let it hit you for 5 turns so the next copy you can take a hit from, you know? And I think that sort of thing, like, people love to extreme jump from one end to the other. And I think you get to a point where you have heuristics you lean on, but you know, like I know when Allie said that Allie also knows, like, in the matchup, given the current state of things, I need to do this now. And I think that sort of thing is something that you can really only get with experience. And that comes not only in the form of playing, but also playing with stakes. Because a lot of times, if something matters to you like that, it kind of gets heightened, you know? And so you play a lot of high stakes magic, that sort of, or high stakes anything really, you kind of get used to that. You know, I'm sure you felt that same way when you played soccer before, you know? And so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope that was helpful. Allie, do you have anything else you want to say on this? Unfortunately, I don't have some, you know, like 5 tips that will fix this for you, but.
Yeah, I think it's just like a ton of reps and really like familiarity with your deck, not only your deck, but how your deck interacts with other decks in the meta. And you kind of get a feel for when you should be interacting with what.
Yeah, I think that's super important. I think, you know, that sort of thing doesn't get talked about enough. We're like, to learn your deck does not only mean to learn yours, it means to also learn how it deals in other environments, you know?
Yeah. And
like, in conjunction with other cards. Everything's contextual, so. Yeah. Hopefully that was helpful, Daniel. Thank you so much for being a patron of the show. And if you unfortunately don't have money to be a patron during COVID and all everything craziness going on in the world, we totally understand. Another way to support the show, if you do want to buy some Magic cards, though, you can go to Oasis Games and you can use code CCMTG to get 4% off every order, and use code WouldThatBeGood to get 15% off your first order. And you can pick up some cards. You know, last week I mentioned, hey, maybe don't buy cards this week. Wait till the BNR hits. Well, now you've saved up that little extra money. Might as well treat yourself. Go over there. I have my 3 Misty Rainforests right to my left that I just ordered last week. Let's go. I just finished building Bant Snow. Those were the only cards I needed, Allie. I'm so excited to play Bant Snow. Is it still good? Is it? I have my foil Arcum Astrolabes. Yeah. I'm ready.
Oh, that was a good purchase.
Yeah, I think they're going to be great. Well, it's just like a mana filter, so I don't think anything bad can happen to that card.
No, that card will never get hit by like a ban or anything.
Yeah. It's probably not too good. Yeah, just like makes a mana different too. I play Prophetic Prisms all the time. Like, pfft. All right. Well, let's talk about the BNR announcement this week. Last week we kind of speculated on these sort of things, and then the announcement happened, and I think we should just kind of work our way through it kind of the same way we did last week. So I'll start with Historic. The 3 cards that were previously suspended before in the forms of Agent of Treachery, Winota, and Fire's Invention have all been from suspended to banned. And so, Allie, do you have any thoughts on those 3? I know that last week you talked about how you thought Fires might come unbanned, and you felt like Agents maybe were unsuspended, sorry, and that Agents should also be unsuspended, you know, just big 7 drops aren't a thing. Were you surprised to see this? You know, like, what are your thoughts on this?
I think I pretty much thought Agent and Fires were going to stay suspended for a little bit, because it's only been, like, what, a couple weeks or so, maybe a month. since they were suspended. So I don't think that's really enough time. And I don't know, the Asian ban is still annoying. I think it's still just like what a 7 drop is capable of doing. So I don't know. It's definitely the cards around it. I don't think it's an Agent of Treachery problem. I think it's a Winota problem. I think it's a Luka problem. Like, playing, tapping 7 lands for an Agent of Treachery is fine. Gotta say, it's fine. So, I don't know. I'm not very happy with that. I'm definitely, like, happy that Winota's moved to ban. That's just, she's asking for, like, more broken cards to be printed. Or not even broken cards, like more medium cards that are going to be broken because of her.
Yeah, not they're broken because of the pieces, right? Like it exacerbates the Winota problem. It's interesting. Yeah. I think Winota is just like slightly too good. Like I wonder if that card at like look at the top 4 cards. It obviously when it hits, it's just so strong, but it hits like, you know, significantly less. I'm very curious about that kind of card because I think those kind of things are really cool and are interesting deck building puzzles, you know. But also, I think the lame to be fair, the lame part about those is once the puzzle's figured out, they don't normally change that much, you know. Like not until strictly better or situationally better in the metagame cards arise, do the card switch, you know. Like it's like, ooh, this is a really cool puzzle. What do we do? And then we figure it out. And it's like, oh, it's like this every single time now. This is the core 25 cards we play. So, yeah, I'm kind of happy that those cards are all gone. I definitely agree that there will probably be a time eventually where I think it's fine to let Agent of Treachery go, if not simply because there are other cards like him in the format, you know, and it's not like, well, we tried to stop a thing for a while. We couldn't, you know, move the game forward without this happening, so yada yada. But I am not a big fan of Fires of Invention as a Magic card. I think it's actually kind of lame. And so, like, it asks you to put lands in it in your deck and then things that abuse having free mana. So I'm glad that card's gone. I don't really want that card back in the format. I think the difference between it and Wilderness Reclamation is actually subtle but profound, where when I play Fires, I always get another 4-drop or lower on the house. And when I, like, play Wilderness Wreck, they have a chance to respond. And I think that chance to respond is huge. It's the same, you know, why Corrosive Grip versus Disenchant, you know? Same kind of thing to me, so.
Yeah. I think one more note on Agent of Treachery. I don't know. Obviously, like, it got into a ton of, like, toxic gameplay. But I'm still, like, I don't know. It seems like one of the only ways to, like, efficiently deal with like mid-range decks, I guess, or like ramp decks or something, because like normally there's just not a way to really attack things at all, right? Because they just have a Teferi and a Narset, and then oh, you dealt with one thing, now they have Uro and another Teferi and something or whatever. It just seems like, I don't know, like, your opponent's playing all the best cards, so this is one way to fight it.
Sure, that's fair. I think there's another card that could fight it. I don't know if you've heard of this one, Allie. It's called Casualties of War. Have you,
never heard of it.
Never heard of it? Okay. Well, it blows up all the things. I think the bigger problem, actually, is, like, the design and the way, like, cards have kind of gone, where every card does something and they all replace themselves and you have just like a kind of a critical mass of those and they're all efficient enough that you can just kind of play them all. It's like if all those cards cost one more mana somewhere, like Uro in either half, Narset, Teferi, like they're just not quite playable and definitely not all in the same deck, and instead you just have piles of like, these are all the cards, they find all of each other, and eventually I overwhelm you with cards that are all efficiently costed and rated, and I kill you, you know? Like, I played a historic deck that was, like, literally all the Teferis, Oath of Teferi, and then Efficient Answers, and I would win via, like, Timely Reinforcements as one of my Efficient Answers, or the Teferi, like, you know, you deck them thing. And that was it. And that, basically, that deck is, like, that incarnate. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that, like, Agent of Treachery, I think if Agent of Treachery could only be used to stop that kind of stuff, it might be fine. But instead, like, Agent of Treachery comes out on like turn 3 or 4 and steals the other person's lands, and then they like keep stealing them and keep stealing them. So I don't know. That's that. But there's more that happened in Historic Alley. We also had Burning Tree Emissary and Nexus of Fate banned. I'm pretty happy to see Nexus of Fate gone. I think Burning Tree will be the time. But I think before we get into that, there's the thing that we kind of predicted 2/3 of this, but we also thought Wilderness Wreck would get banned. So before we move on, Allie, what are you thinking about Wilderness Wreck not being in the format?
I mean, I think that the Nexus of Fate ban was just, like, wrong. I think Wilderness Reclamation is the egregious card. I don't think... I don't think tapping 7 mana to take an extra turn is particularly good. We've seen a ton of other of these effects for 5 mana just not even get played. And, like, I get it shuffles back in, but without just that kind of cheating on mana, I think it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, on the other hand, I think I've gotten to the point where I do think Wilderness Reclamation is kind of an egregious card, as much as I love it. Like, I will keep playing Wilderness I will keep playing Wilderness Reclamation. And I think now, just like in Historic, we just start to explore different types of Temur Rec decks and see how that goes. I'm sure it's just as powerful.
Yeah. I was talking to someone earlier, and I was saying that I'm fairly sure the format, like, at least day one in my head is, like, Field of the Dead decks, Gruul decks, and Reclamation decks. And I'm pretty sure Reclamation is just going to beat everything. Like, obviously Historic is a huge card pool, and we're getting, like, 300 new cards on Thursday, too, which is going to add, like, a huge thing. But we've seen how strong Reclamation is as a card, and I just think that that deck is, you know, beatable totally and more fair than probably, like, Nexus of Fate, you know, looping kind of stuff, when you, like, at least if not more fair, less annoying to play against in a different way. And so I'm kind of glad about that kind of stuff, but at the same time, I think there's going to just be a meme on Twitter in like 1 week where it's like Wilderness Reclamation and they screenshot it for like Standard, Historic, and Modern, you know? Like, it is just like going to be a very, very powerful thing. It is one of these, like, it plus Expansion Explosion is some of the strongest things you can be doing right now. Just full stop. And it goes over basically everything all the time. So.
Yeah. I wonder if people, like, hate losing to Expansion Explosion as much as, like, Nexus of Fate, right? Because, like, it's kind of just doing the same thing. Like, the game is over, but, like, I don't know. I'm just, like, always sick of the, oh, well, the Nexus player can whiff argument, so you have to sit through it. Like, no, they're not going to. If they have the 3 of their pieces, like, Tamiyo Search, Wilderness Wreck, or even, like, Uro, or just, like, anything to draw cards, they're, like, percent chance to whiff most of the time is, like, 0.01, and it's perceived as 10%, so people keep going. I'm like, nope.
Yeah. But nope. I think the dirty trick is that most things that win the game definitively, and that the optics around it are what's different. And so, like, you know, you have, like, a very similar chance of getting out of them Expansion Explosion you end of turn for 8 and, like, refilling their hand and you have no cards, as the same as them casting Nexus of Fate and taking another turn. Or them connecting with Dream Trawler and you're an aggro deck. You know, just, like, I think all those things kind of end the game in a similar, like, slam-the-door kind of fashion. I think that's kind of how a lot of decks play nowadays. Same with Embercleave, which we talked about on the show a lot. They're just perceived differently. When I get Expansion Explosion for a bunch, it's annoying, but the game is over and I get to move to the next game. And there's some feel-bads where, like, wow, I did all this kind of stuff and they just ended on the spot, you know? But the difference between that and Nexus of Fate is you don't have to sit there, you know, with life equity or whatever. Or if you're in a tournament,
you don't have to sit there. You can concede.
Yeah, but they don't see it that way.
That's fair.
And yeah. Also, like, you know, you're going to do the Historic thingy for the Mythic or whatever it's called. I forget the name of it, but they move back. But, like, if you're playing versus Nexus and it's game one and your opponent kind of has a lot of it, but the game's gone on for a little bit and they have clock, are you not just going to sit there and make them lose clock? You know, like, there's that sort of weird thing, too, where obviously, like, on ladder, that's a little easier for us to write off. But, you know, like we talked about before, some people's goal is, like, I'm going to hit Mythic. That's my goal for the month. And that means as much to them as, you know, qualifying for the Invitational or a Pro Tour does for us. You know, like, everyone's goal is different. And so they feel like I should sit here because they are going to lose some clock and these games kind of go long because I'm playing a dirtily deck, whatever, you know, and yada, yada, yada. So, I don't know.
I hate losing to Embercleave. You brought up Embercleave, and I've just been sitting here like seething. I hate Embercleave.
Yeah, I think Embercleave is
It's like you can do everything right, and you just lose anyway.
Yeah.
Especially throwing it on a questing beast, that's absurd. You can't block efficiently, ever.
Yeah, well, combat's for losers. Also, on Gruul Spellbreaker, like, I'm going to hold my card or whatever, you know? And, like, late game, they've had the one, they've kind of flooded out, and they played their Spellbreaker and, like, Embercleave it for, like, exact mana or whatever. And it's like, I just got domed for 10 or whatever. And it's just like, God, I have my kill spell. I did everything right. I didn't play my card because I held up. And then now they're thinking it's Hexproof on their turn for some reason. Like, it's very frustrating.
But, yeah. I do think it was very flavorful to beat Settle the Wreckage, though. That was very nice.
Yeah, that is
Gruul Spellbreaker.
Yeah. Yeah, I Gruul Spellbreaker and I have a close place in our hearts with, you know, our top eight involving us playing that a bunch of that card. But yeah. But yeah, Embercleave, you know, is a I think the big reason Embercleave didn't get banned over Burning Tree, and I do kinda want to talk about this, because I actually think Gruul's gonna be weirdly better because of Burning Tree being gone in a different way, kinda like the Hogak way. But that, like, Embercleave, you can play around it in weird ways where, like, you know, if you kill creatures, it's not very good. And just, like, they have to build up this board and they have to have it and you can counter it. And, you know, just, like, there's, like, a bunch of things you can do to interact with that. And then other cards are much more narrow in the ways that you can interact with them. So there's that. But either way, regardless, we talked about this a bunch in the show. I think the Burning Tree Emissary ban does what Bridge from Below did to Hogak. Where Hogak had these explosive draws, right? And they would be like, put a bunch of zombies in play and deck ourselves, we're insurmountable board, go. And they thought if they banned Bridge from Below, that element of the deck is gone and or weakened drastically in the case of the mill. And that's okay, that makes this thing happen less often, that's fair. And so they feel like, okay, if we hit Burning Tree Emissary in Historic, there are less Pelt Collector into Burning Tree Emissary, other two drop play, and then Embercleave you, right? Like that just happens less often. But instead what happens now is instead of having a card that, like, swings in power level and actually makes Gruul's, like, draw steps be worse in the late game, is they're going to start playing cards like Scavenging Ooze. And so they're just as good as Burning Tree if you don't have a follow-up play, and they're better the rest of the time. And so now, late game, like, instead of them drawing their bear and passing the turn with their mana floating, you know, they're going to play their bear, and their bear suddenly is, like, not only a main deck hate card, but also, like, an insurmountable threat that stabilizes the battlefield instantly. And just, I think getting rid of Burning Tree is going to help make Gruul a better deck that is less explosive. And maybe that's part of the goal, I don't know. But I think if your hopes for Gruul is gone from Historic, I do not expect that. Because I've actually been playing without Burning Tree for like 2.5, 3-ish weeks now. Because someone posted on Twitter a deck list with Scavenging Ooze. And it's like, oh, this is great for winning the mirror. And so I've been doing that. And it's great, Allie. Like, you know, against all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know. I saw, that's what Dylan played in the Lotus Box Invitational, was the Burning Tree list, mm-hmm. and apparently it was very good, so. Yeah. I'm convinced.
Yeah, I am, and I also, I don't think that they mentioned, like, I don't know. I think when people see bans at a deck, they think the goal is to kill the deck. And if the optics aren't conveyed correctly, it looks really, really bad. Or the optics become really, really bad, right? Because the message wasn't conveyed correctly. Of like, our goal isn't to kill Gruul, it's to make you have less turn 3 Embercleave draws. And what they've done is they've just made Gruul a better deck. And so
that's always really frustrating to me, is that people, like, want to kill decks. Like, especially, like, combo decks. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I think combo decks can exist and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just like, I don't know, nerf something a little bit and see what happens.
Sure. Well, I think that segues us to the next format, Pioneer, where obviously they hit Inverter. They just, you know, they hit Dig Through Time. It hurts the deck. No, actually, they just unbanned Oath of Nissa. That's all that happened in Pioneer. It is all I can get. I can't get away from it on Twitter. First it was cakes, now this. And like,
all right, the cake meme is funny. I don't know what's wrong with all of you, but the cake meme is great.
So the cake thing is fine. But, like, it's just, like, it hits a saturation point, kind of like playing against any deck in Magic, right? Like, I loved the first 19 games I played against Gruul in a row, but the 25th really broke my spirits. You know, that's like, and like, also, no one liked my cake tweet, and I was a little hurt by it. I'm not gonna lie. I thought it was quite good. And so, you know.
I didn't, like, understand, like,
my tweet?
It was kind of it was kind of funny. I just like saw the actual like cake videos of people cutting into things that looked like not cakes, but they were cakes. And I loved it, so I just like tagged Dylan in a couple of them. So at first when Magic Twitter got a hold of it, I thought they were just like mad at me because I didn't see like the memes. I thought it was like literally just like stop putting this on my timeline or something. I'm like, okay, I thought they were really cool.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually talking to Emma about this yesterday. We were playing some Valorant, and she saw those kind of videos like 2 years ago, and I saw them like a year ago. I got shown it from a coworker, like a very similar type thing. Oh, yeah,
I've seen them before. I just love them.
Yeah, they're really cool. And just like, I apparently Magic did not know, or most people just didn't know that was a thing. And then yesterday, it just like, it came to the forefront of everyone's mind, you know? And so, like, it was just a little overwhelming. Kind of like the news that they think Inverter is fine. Wow, what a masterful segue. Allie, I love Inverter. I think we mentioned this last week. I think we kind of talked about how, like, we can love decks and know that they should be hit. And I kind of feel like, you know, I got a monkey paw thing here where I get to keep playing Inverter, but, like, the format's, you know, very uninteresting to a lot of players because of this. Do you think the Oath of Nissa ban does enough? Do you think it's going to, you know, create some excitement for the format? What do you think?
I don't really think it does anything, to be honest. I think it's kind of just like, oh, this is a card that, like, should have just not been banned in the first place, and they corrected a mistake, but it doesn't really impact the format, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's almost like Oath of Nissa was on the suspended list for Historic if they used it the way they talked about it, right?
Yeah.
Which is a funny thing. But yeah, I think that card is really good. I think it is good in decks. But I think the problem is a lot of those decks and things compete with Inverter or are, like, prey for Inverter and Breach, to be fair. And, like, those decks are just so efficient. And I think that the real problem is kind of the thing I mentioned earlier in the show. I think part of the problem is those decks are very, very good, and they are very oppressive, and they are very powerful, and they are fun to play. So, like, when all those things kind of happen, like, they get played a bunch, right? Because it's like, oh, wow, Inverter's the best thing to do, and I have a blast playing it. Let's go. But Magic Esports tweeted that they have data that shows there are decks beating Inverter and stuff, right? And they didn't, you know, retweet the 49% thing or re-say it in any way. But that's kind of like the implication I got. And I feel like that if we knew what was beating these sort of things, it might be helpful, right? Kind of like if you hid a present for your kid in your house for his birthday, right? And he couldn't find the present after, like, 2 hours, you might give the kid a hint, right, Allie? You might be like, it's with Fido, or, like, I think Fido really likes that toy, you know, and it turns out it's inside the doghouse, right? And so, they, you know, the kid's like, oh, and then they go and they find it, and they open their Xbox, and they love it, right? And so, I think that, like, that similar thing could maybe happen. I don't have any, like, you know, like, I think they need to give us the data now, but I feel like if there are things out there that are consistently beating Inverter on their data, and it has like a 60% win rate against both those things, and it's things that they seem to think that we don't know about or whatever, they should tell us, because I get that part of the fun is figuring those things out, but their events aren't firing and it's just getting bad PR constantly, and it kind of has low-key been for like the last month and a half, 2 months. And they have no real events for that format coming up. And I think if you know, tomorrow they're going to announce the state of organized play and stuff like that, and maybe there'll be something along those lines there. But I think, like, if you want to get people excited in a format, maybe a way to do that is be like, hey, guess what? Everyone thinks Inverter is the best deck. It actually has a 51% win rate. Y'all have kind of moved it up there. But in reality, Waste Not Black Red has actually got a large player base and has a 55% win rate against all these top decks. Y'all should give this a try. You know, and that, like, injects the community.
Yo, I'd be down.
Yeah, right? Just, like, if it was anything. Even if it was just, like, some deck we've already known before. Like, it actually turns out low-key Mono Green Devotion is still the deck. We didn't want to tell y'all because we banned it, like, four times. But if you've been playing that, you've secretly been playing the best deck forever, right? And I am positive that sort of thing has existed in Magic. Where there's, like, a deck that is secretly the best deck on a percentage scale with a large sample size, and we just, as a community, have written it off. I just know that has to be true because we do that kind of thing a lot, you know? And then
I think that is true of just, like, very, very early KCI when, like, two people were playing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Granted, like, we figured it out eventually, but, like, yeah. I think the point is still there.
Yeah. And so I would just, I don't know. I like Inverter. And I love playing it. I've said it's like one of my favorite things. But if I'm being honest, I haven't played Pioneer in like 3 months. Maybe 2 months. And so like, I love this thing. I love playing this deck. But I don't love it enough to play it for fun casually. And that's not even like a thing where it's like Mason doesn't do that. I've talked about and continue to play my one League of Prowess a day. You know? And so like,
yeah.
And that's literally just playing for chess and to have a good time. And I think that Inverter is more fun than Prowess. And so, I don't know. I think something needs to change. I like the idea of unbanning cards to try and make things happen as like a, hey, we're not going to power down the format. We're going to try and power it up. But I think this is not the kind of thing that's going to do that. And I think it might also just be a situation of Pioneer gets to a place you maybe don't want it to be if you keep doing that. And so, you kind of have to, you know, going forward, maybe take a lighter hand. But for right now, you know, Old Testament it one more time. So, I don't know. That's me. I have a lot of thoughts on Pioneer, by the way. So, if you didn't know.
Yeah, mine's actually, like, quite a bit different. I am... Like, maybe not. I'm under the assumption that Pioneer can both be, like, actually, like, healthy. Like, we're looking at a solid, like, deck distribution, like, et cetera, et cetera. Like, Inverter's only, what, 12% of the meta? Maybe it's a little more. I don't know. And apparently, according to the data, like, yes, I would like to know what's beating Inverter, but I don't know. As a competitive format, it seems like it is at least healthy as a format to me competitively. I do think it's very boring. It hasn't changed in forever. It's just it's a solved format, and I think a lot of people don't like to play that for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that, like I think someone said on my Twitter post, there's just no competitive events for it.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge factor. Like, people have literally played the worst modern formats ever because there was like some kind of thing to earn from it, like a PT invite or something other than just like chests or something. I do agree it's not like, as it currently is, is not just a casual like I'm gonna play this for fun format because it's boring, but
mm-hmm.
yeah I think that like it's probably like healthy as a big tournament competitive format. Because, I don't know, I think, like, five deck formats are good for people to prepare for. I think that, like, I would be happy to play a Pioneer, like, GP or PT or something, just because I know what I need to prepare for and how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. I agree on, like, definitely a level. Like, you tweeted this, and I replied with, like, I think Legends of Runeterra is a very balanced game, and I think Legends of Runeterra is very boring. And, you know, those things aren't, like, synonyms, you know, like, balanced and fun don't just automatically go together, you know? Artifact was a very balanced game, or a fairly balanced game, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to find, you know, a lot of people, even people that liked Artifact, that would say that's a very fun and engaging thing to experience over and over again. So,
yeah.
I know.
So, I mean, I'm very happy to be wrong, like, if they announce that, like, Pioneer feeds into the next, like, PT or something and people actually start playing it again. Mm-hmm. But like, say they don't, and then I'm fine being wrong. That it is just an unhealthy format, but I think a large part of it has to do with just what's going on tournament wise right now.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious. See, the thing is, I think WotC is really, they have this really powerful carrot called the Pro Tour Invite, and basically whatever they put the carrot in front of, players will show up with. Like, and like an X amount of players always will, right? They'll just be like, I'm going to try to make it to the Pro Tour, and you can guarantee this amount of people will show up if it's like a thing that's easily accessible. And what I'm curious about is, if we put the PT carrot in front of Pioneer, is there churn? You know, not so much like how many people show up to play, because I think there just will be like, you know, a good amount of people in a Magic Online event, but are we still seeing the same stuff? Because those kind of people are also the kind of people that will like try to get the best edge possible, right, for the most part. And that you can see something where it's like, if Inverter has like a very targeted weakness as consistently exploitable, we'll see that happen over the course of like, you know, a bunch of PTQs. So I'm curious about that kind of stuff, and I'm hopeful. I mean, I don't know, I like playing Pioneer, and I was looking forward to playing a bunch of Pioneer this year on the SCG tour along with Modern before, you know, COVID-19, and I hope to play it again someday in the future.
Yeah, so. I'm also just, like, pretty indifferent with Pioneer. I think people keep comparing it to Historic, which I don't think is really appropriate. I don't know. I think they're very different formats, and I think Pioneer is quickly getting its own format identity. But I do think a comparison comes in when they say they're going to put Pioneer on Arena and then focus a lot on Historic instead, which I'm happy with, but I wonder if that like hurts the format of just not having it on Arena and everyone's just playing Historic instead.
Yeah, I think I think that's like a very good point. I also think that like when Pioneer comes to Arena, we'll probably see some fast changes, and we're kind of in this weird spot where it's like, I'm sure they would love for Pioneer to be on the client today. Just more cards and more packs to sell, right? And just more, like, get people off Modo, you know? Just, like, just being real. And so, like, hey, they would love to do that. That's all they want. And their streamers get to stream on the platform they want and have another thing to do, and they're not switching between just two formats in draft. Whew! WotC would love that. But right now, that's not the case of things. You know, the cards gotta get programmed or whatever. I'm not a techno wizard or whatever. But I'm sure it's coming. And it's funny, too. I agree with the, like, Historic and Pioneer. Like, why are they getting compared? And it's honestly, it just seems to be a thing of, like, timing. They were just announced kind of close to each other. And then players have this really, like, bad habit of things are extreme, like we talk about. And, like, well, WotC is only going to support one format. And they're similar because they're both card pools from a relatively-ish similar time period. One's 8 years and one's 2 years, and they overlap in some cards. And it's like, oh, well, when you say it like that, you know? So I don't know. They can both exist. And there's going to be moments where WotC shines a light on Historic, and there'll be moments where they shine a light on Pioneer. And, you know, never Popper.
I don't really see them, like, killing Pioneer. I don't think this is indicative they don't care about Pioneer. I think it's just, like, they legitimately believe that Pioneer is healthy, and I can see that. I, like, especially if they're, like, going to say something tomorrow about organized play, if it does involve, like, Pioneer to some extent, like, even just, like, oh, there's, like, Pioneer qualifiers on Modo that feed into PTQs or whatever the system is now. I don't really grind Modo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. Yeah. Just if there was something, that'd be nice to know. I think we're, you know, and it's interesting stuff. I think we're kind of going in circles here a little bit. So I'm going to table this from now, and then maybe next week after this announcement, we'll have something more to say on this. We'll see. Let's move on to the next format. That's Modern. Astrolabe is banned. Allie, I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit here for a second. I know I've done it a couple times today. All right. So there was a big contingency of the form of the, like, people on Twitter and stuff that talked about how they really wanted Astrolabe and Sanctuary banned, and they were pretty, they weren't like upset, but they were like frustrated that Sanctuary stayed around, And I think Astrolabe really props up Mystic Sanctuary, because Astrolabe says play basics and Sanctuary says play basics, and they work really, really well together. And Astrolabe fixes the problems of your, you know, a heavy blue deck. And so I think if you hit Astrolabe, you slap Sanctuary on the wrist, and we get to learn, like, is Sanctuary a bad kid, or is it just hanging out with the wrong crowd? Do you know what I mean? Like, do we need to take action on this card, or do we not? I could easily see a world where we maybe should, but in a world where we want to, like, we think Modern's, like, a fairly healthy format, and we just want to kind of churn through a little bit and handle something that's kind of egregious and kind of breaks our rules in the form of Astrolabe, then this is, like, a totally reasonable, like, okay, maybe we're going to hit Sanctuary, but for now, we think it's just, you know, a bright kid with a good future. It's just hanging out with the wrong crowd. So that's my take on it. I'm glad Astrolabe's gone. Good riddance.
Yeah, I think Astrolabe getting banned is very good. I probably would have liked to see Uro. I think that card's miserable. Like, obviously, there's a ton of cards I'd like to see. Like, Teferi's miserable, but I think at the core of it, Astrolabe is really causing most of the problems in Modern for me, so I'm very happy to see it banned.
Yeah, I think Astrolabe not as strongly helps Uro as it does Mystic Sanctuary, but still, like, being able to fetch basics a bunch, you know, and let those fuel your Uros while you're still curving out into your Uro is a lot different than fetch shock. You fetch shock twice and suddenly, you know, Burn and Prowess and Humans are really knocking on your door a lot harder, you know? Uro stabilizes you, but it becomes a lot different from, oh, I gained two to, oh, I broke even. You know, and those kind of things are huge swings. So, yeah. I don't know. I think it's good. Being pro-Astrolabe banned is, like, really controversial for some percentage of players, but when you play the games, it's very clear, and if you just look at the game, it's not very clear, in my opinion. And so, you gotta play the games against Astrolabe to realize how egregiously powerful that card is. And how, like, you know, kind of game-breaking, right? Like, mana is supposed to cost you something. You're not supposed to get free-ish mana. And it tried to be a cost, but it just didn't have enough enough barriers in it, you know? It needed to be, like, one in a tap, or only tap snow mana, or something like that. So, yeah, maybe in the future we'll see Astrolabe 2, 2 mana for you. I don't know. Rest in peace, Urza. Sure. Good night, sweet prince. Allie, they hit Popper, Expedition Map and Mystic Sanctuary Band. I assume this is a hit on Tron, and then I believe Popper has Gush, so Mystic Sanctuary Gush sounds busted, so I guess I'm glad that happened for them. I'm not positive, though.
Yeah, I know people just have been complaining about Mystic Sanctuary, so I guess I'm glad that they did that for them.
Yeah. Popper players are players, too. Hashtag 2020. We might not know what they are on or about. I'm gonna blast Corey Bondmeister real quick. It was so funny. I watched his video on the banning thing. I'm going to blast him over here. And he's like, yeah, I see even Dylan's upset about it. And he was like, I looked at the deck list, and I see Astrolabe's in that format, and that card's egregious. It needs to go. And that says something. If he were to go to Goldfish and look at deck list, the format doesn't have enough events that he found deck list from before the last format, because that card's definitely banned in Popper. And so... Watsy, give Popper players some events too, that way more deck lists can pop up. So when Corey's making a video, he doesn't, you know, find last format's deck list on the front page of Goldfish. it's a bad look for everyone.
I always thought it would be cool if, because SCG's been more of, like, experimental in their formats, right? Like, they were the ones to really, like, start doing team trios instead of unified. They started doing Pioneer, like, right off the announcement, which was super cool. So, like, I really would have liked to see just a Popper open, like, once, just to see what happens. And, like, if it sucks, then fine, whatever, you don't do it again. But I don't think it would suck. I think Popper players would literally, like, fly wherever in the world to go play a Popper open.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious about that kind of stuff. And it's definitely interesting that there wasn't at least, like, a classic or a thing at the Invitationals, you know? Like, they had, like, the little 8-person pods, you know? But, like, they didn't have, like, one of their super things, and so it is weird. I wonder if they did try it in the past, and we just don't know. Like, they're like, yeah, we did this once, and literally no one came out, and we did it again, and nothing happened again, and that's why you don't see it. and you don't even know.
I believe there was an SCG Classic at the first Invitational I went to that was Pauper, but okay. I do not remember anything about it. I believe Kendra won it. She either won or top eighted or something. Sorry, this is like 2 years ago, so I apologize for all the facts I'm getting wrong. But yeah. I am unsure how many people actually made it. But that seems like less of a good shot for Pauper, because like people aren't gonna fly to an Invitational to play a Classic.
Yeah, very sure. Especially Roanoke. I mean, hello. Anyways. I think that's it. If you want to hear more about Pauper, there's Common Knowledge on the site. Pauper Podcast, they're great. Go check them out. And so you can, you know, look on this same feed if you're on the Constructive Criticism Network feed. If you're on the individual, for us, you're not going to see it there, but you can easily search up Common Knowledge. Get it, Allie? It's common because it's a Pauper is a common format and they're helping you with knowledge.
Ooh, I get it.
Yeah, it's very big brains. You know, it's, you gotta have an IQ to understand that humor. well, that's gonna do it for all of this. Allie, do you have any closing thoughts on the bands and all that kind of stuff?
No, I think we touched on a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, let's see if something happens from Standard in the next 2 weeks, because that's what I'm thinking is gonna happen, whether it needs to or not. Thank you all so much for hanging out. Allie, if someone wants to find you, where can they go?
You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/mythic_mebo or on Twitter at mythicmebo.
You can find me on twitch.tv/themasonclark and twitter.com@masonclark. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you all next week for another episode of Constructed Criticism.